I'm the person that wants to have a blueprint. I want to be able to know that this is tested, this is proven. If I'm going to invest my time in it, I know it's going to work. That was my reason for doing this book and the way that I did it. So the MORE framework is M period, O period, R period, E period, MORE, meaning, optimism, relationships, and engagement. And these are four pillars that underpin our well-being.
Today on Time Tested Mastery, I'm excited to welcome Jan Rader, the self-care sensei. Jan is a national gold medalist in AAU karate, a well-being educator, keynote speaker, and the author of Strive for More, What Well-Being Really Means and How You Can Achieve It. With over 30 years of experience in martial arts, positive psychology, and behavior change, Jan blends evidence-based science with lived wisdom to help individuals and organizations thrive. Her unique MORE framework, meaning, optimism, relationships, and engagement, offers a powerful path to resilience, balance, and fulfillment. I had the privilege of meeting Jan when we spoke together at MIT, and she brings incredible energy, clarity, and organization to her message, and I can't wait for you to hear from her today. Welcome to the show.
I'm thrilled to be here. I'm looking forward to this conversation, Mark. We had such a great time at MIT, and this is so exciting.
Great. Well, I'm glad to have you here. And, you know, as we get started, you know, I love your title, the self-care sensei. Immediately when I you know, saw your introduction and I heard that word, it was like I could picture exactly what I was expecting from you. But I think a lot of people, even myself, couldn't properly define the word sensei. And I know it comes from your martial arts background, but would you take a moment and just sort of give everyone an explanation of what that title means and what the responsibilities are for a sensei?
Well, a sensei I just want to clarify, I'm in Okinawan Japanese martial arts, which is karate. Karate is used a lot in other arts. Karate is hands and feet, sort of 50-50. And it's a defensive art. But the word sensei actually means teacher. In the style that I trained in, sensei was fourth degree black belt. And the information about sensei is what they usually say is when 10,000 students begin, one out of 10,000 students become a sensei. So It is, and when I love that you use the word responsibility. You have a responsibility to your students to not only teach them the best that you can, but to also make sure that they're picking things up and being the best that they can. Because when you're teaching a defensive art, something they're going to possibly use to defend themselves, that's a big responsibility. Because they may be in a situation where they're going to have to defend themselves. And if you didn't do your job, things may not go well. So,
right.
So that's the long and the short of the word sensei. It means teacher.
There's a responsibility, but there's also a lot of credibility in, you know, achieving that title. And, you know, one of the things that I know from martial arts is that there's a lot of discipline that is required, you know, in that particular practice. And so I was wondering if you could sort of share, you know, with the audience who are mostly salespeople, you know, how discipline was, you know, was a requirement of the martial arts that you were involved with and sort of how it helped you in developing into becoming the teacher that you are.
I want to clarify that the martial arts is an art. So it's physical discipline. A lot of people think of it as a sport. There are sport versions. You see them in different places. I'm not going to get into, you know, cage matches and things like that. That's your sport version. Point fighting tends to be a sport version of it. But the art itself has long traditions. When you're respecting that art, you're learning a little bit more the nuances of it as opposed to just the physical aspect of it. The other day when we spoke, you mentioned about running marathons. You have to run many, many miles before you run a 26-mile marathon. You don't just go out and go, oh, I'm going to run 26 miles and today. So you have to run thousands of miles. I've never done it. I've known people that have done them, but I've never done one. But they run so many miles more than what they do. So, and that takes discipline. And so any thing that you do, like salespeople, that takes a lot of discipline. You have to understand the product you're selling. You have to believe in the product you're selling. You have to, all of these things, you have to make the commitments to go and see the people that you're talking about, or make, you know, appointments with the people you're talking about. That's discipline. That, and when you think, so anywhere you're going to be successful, you have to have discipline. From my perspective, being in the martial arts, when I first started out, I would sit in my car before I had to go into class and literally grip the steering wheel and breathe, because I'd go, I mean, people are trying to hit you when you're in the martial arts and you have to defend yourself. You know, granted, we'll get into that a little bit later, but so you have that. That's a degree of discipline, because I could have easily just driven back home and not go. And each and every single time I gripped that steering wheel, it got easier and easier. Not that I didn't stop doing that activity, but it got easier to do, because with each challenge, I developed self-esteem. I developed belief in myself that I could handle something more. It's just like goal setting. When you set small goals for yourself and you achieve that goal, you're ready for the next one.
Yeah.
So that's that. It's the same type of thing. I think what's different for me is it translates to every aspect of
that's a great lead into, you know, what I wanted to ask you. It sounds like you had, in the beginning, there was some apprehension. You had a routine to sort of deal with the apprehension. And the more you repeated the behaviors, the successful behavior, the choice to let go of the steering wheel and go inside, yeah, is that the easier that it got. And I know that you have, you know, 10,000 matches on the mat under your belt. And so can you share, you know, a little bit about what you've learned on the mat that you've been able to translate into other aspects of your life and your success there?
Well, the reason that I share that I've fought over 10,000 rounds, and that's a guesstimate, you know, that's 30 plus years is a long time. I used to compete in, as you mentioned in the intro about AAU, I have gold medal in AAU. The reason I bring that up is just the commitment. You know, it's a commitment, and it's a nationally recognized thing. But I love Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, the 10,000 hours to like really become proficient at something. So that's why I bring up the 10,000 rounds, because you become proficient. And I don't think, I mean, granted, you become proficient from the physical aspect, you know, your ability to block and use angles and counter and stay calm, strategies, any of the strategies you use. And since we're not really talking about that today, but the way that translates into everything else is, for one, you learn it the minute you start taking something personally. When you're sparring with somebody in that moment, you lose, because it's a distraction. But when somebody hits you, if you take it personal, another hit comes before you realize that you need to block. Maybe you needed to move. Maybe you were in the wrong place. All of those, maybe you had your hands down, all those things. So the minute you start to take it personal, you're in a losing situation. The other thing that I used to tell my students all the time when they were sparring is, you don't know what's on the other person's mind. So when you're in a sparring match or any kind of difficult conversation, because this really translates to difficult conversations or difficult situations, the only thing between the two people is air, really, when you think about it. And if I try to read your mind, I'm being distracted. If I try to go, if I take personally maybe a tone that you have in your voice, I don't know what happened to you earlier today. So I can't, if I keep taking that in, I'm hurting myself, if you will. And then I'm not staying clear in that situation. Everybody's had this experience. You go to your doctor's office and the person that checks you in is kind of not so nice. Or you go to the checkout in a store, and maybe the person behind the counter there that's checking you out is not having a great day because two people before you, that person yelled at them. So you never know what someone's situation is. The other thing is, when you find that you're taking things personally, you maybe need to look inside. You have to decide, why is that bothering me? And maybe there's some deeper work there. which we can get into a little bit more in the conversation.
I think you mentioned it another time, is that when you take things personally, you lose your personal center, I think is the way that you described it before.
Yeah, you do, for sure. Because like I said, it's a distraction. You're, instead of being in the present and in the moment, whatever moment it is, even if it's a difficult moment, second I go, what the heck did they mean by that? And we do all of this in a split second in our head. You know, very rarely does anybody verbalize that. Or later, we go and make up some narrative in our head about what happened. And from a scientific perspective, we're hardwired for negativity. It's a self-defense mechanism. But unfortunately, today, the majority of us don't have apex predators chasing us. The majority. There are still people on the planet that can be a problem for them. But the majority of people don't. So that hardwire negativity, it's still important, but it's not crucial. And positivity actually helps us to collaborate a little bit better. So what happens, the reason I'm bringing up the negativity and losing your center, is later on, you start to make up some kind of narrative in your head of what happened during some transition between, you know, or transaction between you and someone else, whether it be a monetary one, a, you know, conversation, what have you. We tend to go negative. So again, that's back to, what am I doing? What is bothering me about this? Why is this bothering me? And a lot of that goes back to behavior change. And I think awareness, self-awareness.
Okay. And that's one of the items in your book that you talk about. So for me to sort of go back just a little bit, the time on the mat and the experiences that you had there, it sounds like to me, from what you described, is that you have taken the self-awareness of your thought patterns during the middle of the match, and you've sort of taken some of those lessons into your relationships and communication styles with other people. Is that a good assessment?
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. You know, I think the other part of when you're sparring is you have to practice detachment. And a lot of people, especially today, there's not a lot of detachment because everybody's ready for a fight at every moment. somebody looks at you the wrong way and they're ready to put them up, you know? And the one overriding message in the martial arts is you train to never have to use it. And most people, when you say that to them, they're like, because it's a defensive art. It's not an aggressive art.
Right,
I'm not going out looking for a fight. What I'm doing is, with all of these matches, with all of these things, those moments that I took it personal, that I lost myself in the match, I missed, you know, it's like if you're driving your car and you sneeze, you've lost 20 seconds because you can't stop from doing, you know, closing your eyes and sneezing. And 20 seconds is a lot when you're behind the wheel of a car. 2 seconds is a lot when somebody's trying to hit you. So you have to stay focused and centered. And I think that from a salesperson's perspective, if you allow these distractions to come in, you lose track of maybe what the person was saying that you were talking
right.
to.
Yeah.
Sales is everything. Everybody's always selling something. So right now I'm selling my ideas to your listeners and hopefully they buy it. I definitely think that that's one of the things. The reason I'm stuttering now, it's hard to put into words until you've experienced these things yourself.
One of the things you were talking about was salespeople and how it's important to be detached. And I've been sharing, and I heard it at the beginning of my career, is, you know, we can't be emotionally attached to the outcome. And so many salespeople are, so many human beings are. That's one thing that really resonated with what you said. The other one that you talked about is that we only have air between the person that we're talking with, and our perceptions are really what's going on in our mind. And usually when I'm talking with somebody and they're describing an interaction with someone else, or they're describing the character of someone else, or they're describing the other person, I learn more from the person that's speaking to me than I learn about the person that they're talking about, because I'm learning about how they perceived the situation, knowing that how they perceived it may not have been the way that the other person intended it. So I think it's fascinating that you talk about, you know, the way that we perceive things in communication.
Yeah, Absolutely, 100%. And that's the, you know, that's part of what I talked about at MIT, about our perception. Our perception is the main thing. And that's the only thing we have control over. Because what the other person says, or their character, or how they are, I have no control over that. I can't tell someone else how to be. And you're going to, you know, we bump up against each other all day long. And my philosophy, and why I wrote my book, and why I do trying to do what I'm doing now, is to get people to understand that if we can make this the best we can make it, and it's an ongoing project, it's never over, it's ongoing, then when we come in contact with other people, it's going to be that much better. You know, so the person that you were just describing, that maybe they were describing someone else's character, well, you can feel compassion for that person if you don't care for their character. You can, and it's all done out of a place of not judgment. I try my best. I mean, I'm human. I try my best to not judge anyone, because everybody's on a different path. Everybody's on a different part of their path. And some people choose to do the work and some people don't. And that's the other part of this, which folds back over into discipline and self-discipline. Making yourself a better person is a lot of work. It's a lot. I mean, and the older you are, the harder it can be, because it's what did they say in the Indiana Jones movie? It's not the age, it's the mileage. I mean, it's the things that happen to us in our lives that shape who we are. And that goes for everybody else that you come in contact with. The reason I like to use the word detached is because I'm not going to bring my own personal feelings into it, whatever's happening. Because I've just found every time that you do that, it winds up not being good. It really does. I don't know if that's the same for you, if you feel that way. I mean, granted, there's a place for being emotionally attached with your family, with, you know, people that are very close to you, those kinds of things. And even when you're thinking about the word empathy, you're not necessarily pitying someone. You know, when you're empathizing with somebody, you're trying to understand where they're coming from. You're trying to look at it from their perspective. And if you bring yourself into it, well, then you're not looking at it from their perspective. You're looking at it from yours and theirs.
I wanted to talk a little bit about well-being, which is the other part of your title, the well-being sensei. And we had a fascinating conversation talking about self-care the other day. And I was hoping that you would share some of your ideas with our audience about why is it so important to not run around with an empty bucket, so to speak.
Right. Well, I love that you brought that up, because I was going to say, as you know, you were there, my talk was based on the glass half full concept, the metaphor, you know, cliche, whatever way you want to frame it. And you can't pour from an empty cup. You can't pour from an empty pitcher. And I'm not a person that disagrees with bubble baths and, you know, manicures and pedicures and getting together with your friends and having wine or whatever. I mean, I don't drink, but sharing time with your friends. Those are all great things, but they're not true self-care. True self-care means I'm trying to understand who I am, because the relationship you have with yourself is the longest relationship you're ever going to have. And if you don't cultivate a good relationship with yourself, your life is not going to be that fun. It really isn't, because it's just you and you forever. I mean, there's other people that come into your life, you know, your life, your friends, deep relationships that you have, you know, all of those things. And those people are important. But you're the one that stays on the train for the entire time. Mm-hmm. So what I talk about with true self-care is what I said earlier about if somebody says something to you and you're taking it personal, why are you taking that personal? What was something, and I hate the word trigger because it's so overused right now, but why did what they say bother you? Usually there's something deeper in there, and maybe you haven't realized it. So there's so many ways to discover those things. But like I said earlier, it's work. It's work to do that, right? Because looking in the mirror, people don't like to do that. They like to go, well, it's the other person, or they did it. Because it's easy. That's easy to do. Is it fair? No, it's not fair. But if you start to look at them in the mirror and go, why did that bother me? And then start That's the beginning of self-awareness. Once you get that self-awareness, then you start to want to look in a little deeper into what are some things that can make things better for me. That's where my book came in, that I tried to find evidence-based activities, evidence-based information. And the reason I like the evidence-based part is we have so many things thrown at us all the time. And we don't know whether we should believe them or not believe them. And that's why I like the scientific approach, is because what I share from vetted experts in positive psychology who have been doing this for decades. And all of their research has been replicated. And the reason that's important is if we do a one-off, we're not sure if we do that study again, we're going to get the same outcome. But if you can get a same or similar outcome each time you do a study, then you know kind of that, okay, I think we've got something here. Not that we've learned everything, but I think we've got something. So in my book, I offer a lot of explanations about the different aspects of well-being. Well-being and wellness are two separate things, but they're together. Wellness has to do a little bit more with your physical aspects of people's lives, you know, your blood pressure, your cholesterol, your how fit you are, those kinds of things. And when you think of the word wellness, you think of those things. Right. Well-being is more psychological, spiritual, sort of almost more abstract. Not that wellness can't be abstract too, but well-being is a little bit more abstract. But the two things marry, because if physically you're better, mentally you're better. Mentally you're better,
physically you're better. Yeah.
So the two things are married together. So with well-being, what I do in my book is I try to break it down a little bit. And I try to do it from a sense where people get excited maybe about wanting to read a little deeper into research. And then I offer 8 different exercises, which I call well-being wazas. And I use the word waza because that means technique in martial arts. I thought it'd be fun. And they're things you can do every day. And it's just like anything. When you set a goal, you want to start a new habit, you start small. Start with one of the activities. Get good at that. Add another one. Get good at that. Add another one. That kind of thing. So that way, you're not overwhelmed with, oh my gosh, she has 8 things. I got to do all 8 today. No, you don't have to do all 8. So I guess you can decide if you want to share some of that now or if you want to get into the MORE framework.
So before we go into the MORE framework, I know you said today you really don't know what to believe, but you like science-based research and things that have been replicated. And I think it's so fascinating that there's a large part of our society today that says, well, if I feel something, it must be true. It's true if I feel it. There's, you know, the only evidence that they are, you know, believing in is their perception or their sensation of it. Then there's another crowd of people that says, well, it's, you know, scientifically proven. And when you don't know whether the scientific study that they're using was propaganda that was funded by somebody with a special interest, or whether it was truly backed up and replicated by independent scientists over and over with different studies.
Right.
I found that to be fascinating, and it's sort of a fresh approach because the whole world seems to be arguing about things, and we don't have a standard on what is the truth. And I think your book goes to that issue. It's, you know, I'm giving you a framework, this MORE framework that is founded on truth that it's at least replicated, you know, that I can give you a reason why it's true.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up. What's important about studies, and I don't really want to get into a whole lesson about scientific studies, but one of the main things is replication. Have they been able to replicate? And how many people have they studied? Or, you know, how many times, how many different, when we're talking about psychology, we're talking about, quote, soft science. I don't like that term. But anyway, when you have people involved, people tend to have different feelings about things and different thoughts about things. So it's different than, you know, cells and so on and so forth. So when you talk about that, you want this study to be replicated. You want it to be done more than once. When you talk about the propaganda, who's paying for the study? You know, what are the biases of the people who are doing the study? They're supposed to tell you all those things when you read a study. And those are important things to know. But I think the main thing for what we're talking about here today is replication. How many times have they done it? Over how many years have they done it? How many people has it been tried with? So, and that's what I like about the people that I share in my book. They've done this over and over and over again with many different types of people, many different types of groups. So I feel pretty confident sharing what I share in the book because it's important to me to give people things that are, quote, proven to work if you do them.
Right.
A lot of things will work if you do them, but that's the main thing, what we talked about earlier about discipline, is the doing. But I wanted to be able to give that to people. And of course, I do share, obviously, my book is from my perspective. It's from what I'm sharing. But in the back of the book, I like to share all of these resources so that the reader can then decide, gee, I liked that and I want to dive deeper into that. I'm not sure about that. I want to dive deeper. You know, okay. We need to look things up and try to look for things ourselves. But then there's that problem of what you talked about, the propaganda and all of those kinds of
right.
things. So those are some ways to figure out, you know, who is funding a study? What is the bias of the researchers? How many times have they done it? So those are some things that you can look into before you read a study. I recommend everybody actually read a study. You can go to the NIH and read the paper, their white paper on things, on different things. You know, just Google something you're interested in. If you see it on the NIH, then it's probably been peer reviewed. Peer reviewing is important too, like other peers in that genre have looked at it. So those are important things. And that's again about feeling confident about what you're doing. A lot of people would say then, well, I don't have time to do that. Well, I get it. That's why you go to the people like myself sharing with you solid researchers, solid research, because I've done all that. I've read thousands of studies. So, I'm fascinated by it. I love reading. I love doing that. But that's the thing when you, I know that you had mentioned something before about burnout from your and well-being from the people that
salespeople. I mean, that's one of the things that I share with people is that, you know, you do have to work hard in order to be successful in our business, but you have to also work hard on being strong. You have to have that well-being that you were talking about. If you go to an appointment with an empty bucket, your clients deserve more than an empty bucket. They need you to be full and engaged with them.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it's a good lead into the book. And so I want you to give an overview because I want people to read the book and I'm going to give them the link so that they can go and actually pick up your book. But can you introduce the Moore framework and what you're hoping that people will find as a result of reading through it and doing the exercises that you talk about?
Okay. Well, I'm like the person that wants to have a blueprint for something. I want to be able to know that this is tested, this is proven. So if I'm going to invest my time in it, I know it's going to work. So that was my reason for doing this book and the way that I did it. So the Moore framework is M period, O period, R period, E period, Moore, meaning, optimism, relationships, and engagement. And these are four pillars that underpin our well-being. So the more we understand meaning in our lives, things that are important to us, things as a whole, there's also meaning in general. You know, most people, when they say, oh, what would you like out of life? Well, I'd like to be happy. A lot of people feel the same way. So there's, you know, the fact that if you believe in something larger than yourself, I don't want to get into religion, but, you know, the spirituality part, if we believe in something larger than ourselves, that's a sense of meaning. And most people can understand that. Most people can share that. But then you get into personal meaning. Something that means something to me may not mean something to you, or it means something different to you. So it's important to find out those things. Optimism is, I pair optimism with positive emotions because those two things are so important. Optimism is a choice. I can choose. We talked about perspective earlier. I'm going to choose to be positive. I'm going to choose to be optimistic. I'm going to choose to look for the good. Most people choose to look for the negative. So I'm going to switch it and do the other. Optimism is really important. Again, ties back into meaning. What are the things that I value in my life? How am I going to continue to have those optimistic feelings, the positive emotions about those things? Relationships, obviously so important. They underpin our whole lives. One of the longest longitudinal studies that's been done, it started out with Harvard people. It was originally called the Harvard Grant Study. It was funded by Grant. I can't remember his first initials, but he was like a department store owner, and he wanted to know what made people happy. So he invested in 1938, he invested $10,000, which was a lot of money in 1938, into a study to find out what makes us happy. Still ongoing today, this study. And one of the key things they found out is relationships, strong relationships, are the most important thing in our lives. So that ties back to meaning. That ties back to optimism. Finally, engagement. That's the E part. Engagement is losing yourself in something. I don't know. In the martial arts, I can explain that easily. You know, if I'm in a class, picking a class, all of a sudden the hour is over and I didn't even realize it. So anything that you truly love doing that challenges you, I am not talking about screen time. I'm not talking about scrolling through, because we can lose ourselves in that too. That's not challenging. That's not meaningful. That's not growth. So you want to find an activity that challenges you, something that you can learn a new skill, something that maybe you have a little bit of skill at the beginning, but then it requires you to put your attention into it. And then you wind up doing that. So there's your framework in a nutshell. The only one that I don't have exercises for is engagement, because I can't tell you what you're going to be excited about. I can only suggest certain things and the criteria that it takes, you know, that you know, like scrolling is not an engagement. It doesn't fall under the E. But I don't know, pick anything. Some people like chess, some people like, I don't know, knitting, sewing, there's a myriad of things. So that's the only one that I don't have anything for. But all the other ones, I have several different activities that you can use to improve those things. The meaning one, the beginning, is more about who are you? Find out things about yourself. Maybe ask deeper questions about yourself. Like I said earlier, when somebody says that to me, why is that bothering me? What's coming up for me? And if you find out what's coming up for you, then you can sort it out. Then you can make peace with it. You can maybe even be optimistic about it. Because so many of us, when we think about our past, the word regret pops up. All the negative feelings pop up. Oh, I was terrible. I was a bad person. That was an awful thing. Awful things should make you wiser if you learn to use those awful things. They should make you wiser for moving forward. And that they should also make you appreciate where you are right now. So in the meaning one, that's what I kind of focus on. Optimism, we're kind of focusing on what can we do to be optimistic about things? How can I change the way I look at those things? The perspective part. I shared at MIT, you know, that your glass is actually completely full. It's not half full or half empty. It's completely full. So it's really the perspective that we have. Relationships, that one, there are so many things that you can do for building quality relationships. Again, like I said at the beginning, the relationship you have with yourself is the most important one. Because if you don't have that one sorted out, you're not going to be good in the rest of them.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, I don't know if any of your listeners, if you want me to share a couple of the activities, I'm happy to do that if you think they would be interested.
Why don't you offer one? And I'm going to tell you why I only want you to offer one, is that I am a firm believer that everybody that has listened today has gotten at least three really good ideas from what you've shared today. I know they have, because I've gotten great ideas from you, but everybody's gotten good ideas before. It's not whether you heard a good idea, it is how you apply it. And the most important way that people can apply it is to purchase your book and actually go through all of the exercises themselves. You know, so many books, people read them, they hear ideas, you know, they put it on the shelf and the idea sits on the shelf. I don't want them to do that. So give one example, and then I'm going to encourage them to buy the book so that they can do all of the exercises that you're offering.
Okay. I'm going to give you my favorite one, and it's the easiest one. It's called What Went Well. And I actually do it every Wednesday on social media because I figure it's the middle of the week. I don't want to do it every day because I don't want to bother people. But what went well, what's different about that activity as opposed to, because it's based in gratitude. It's based on being grateful, because being grateful is extremely important on all fronts. And what went well is different than a gratitude list. And the reason is there's a why in there. So the meaning piece comes in. So what went well? three things that went well for you today, but why did they go well? So pick something. My significant other brought home my favorite ice cream. Why was that great? Well, I never asked them. So, and that's as small as it can be. I got together with my close friend that I hadn't seen in a while for, we shared a great hot beverage, and I got to catch up and find out what's going on with them and appreciate the fact that I have this really cool relationship.
How can they reach you? How can they follow you on social media? Where can they find you and share with them where they can find your book? Even though I'm going to put that information in the show notes, you know, share with people how they can reach you.
Well, first, my website is selfcaresensei.com, and I'm on LinkedIn, Jan Rader on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook as Selfcare Sensei. I'm on Instagram as Selfcare Sensei J Rader, I think. And my book is available on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. I actually, if you Google my book, there might be somewhere else that you can find it for, I don't know, whatever you want to pay, because it's supposed to be on a whole bunch of different platforms. So I think that's it. That's it in a nutshell. I mean, I'm honored if anybody buys the book. I wanted to let you know ahead of time, especially with salespeople, because I know your time is limited and you want to have a quick hit. The book is not long and it's very succinct. I did that on purpose because I wanted to make sure that it was an information and stuff you could apply. And that's, I'm a firm believer in that. I don't want to drag you down with too much stuff.
I appreciate that. You know, Jan, you know, thanks for joining with the audience today and sharing your more framework and talking about, you know, your life and discipline and well-being and all of the things that you are doing with your work. I share all the time that, you know, seemingly ordinary people, we don't have to be movie stars. We don't have to be famous. We don't have to have our name in lights. You know, seemingly ordinary people can do extraordinary things. And I appreciate that you are teaching some of those tools to help people achieve extraordinary success. So thank you for that. And I look forward to the next time we get together somewhere out there, you know, doing our speaking and doing other things together.
I do too. Thank you so much, Mark. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm honored to be able to be a part of you, your podcast today with your listeners.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So today for everyone, you know, thank you, Jan. Go out and get her book, find it in the show notes and go order it today. But make sure that you actually do the exercises that are in there. Get the benefit of the message, get the benefit of the investment of your time and money when you purchase the book. So for today, my name is Mark Dolan. I'm your host for Time Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell, and I look forward to talking with you again next week.